This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Breaking Ground, a podcast about earth-moving machinery, businesses, and characters in the industry. All your hosts work for TerraCat, New Zealand's Caterpillar machinery dealer. I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Marty Turek. Joining you over the phone, today we'll be talking with Crusaders rugby team captain and New Zealand All Black, Scott Barrett. Welcome, Scott. It's great to have you here in the studio today.
G'day, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So while TerraCat and Caterpillar are long-time partners with the Crusaders, it's fair to say Scott's a little removed from the earth-moving industry, although if there's a connection, we'll find it today. I'm also joined in the studio by my colleague, Anne-Marie Robinson.
Hi, everyone. I think today's conversation will be valuable for anyone thinking about leadership, performance, and culture within their business, and I'm looking forward to it.
So, Scott, tell us about your upbringing in the Barrett household in Taranaki with your seven siblings. What was that like, and you're from a strong rugby background with your dad playing for Taranaki and the Hurricanes?
Yeah. So I grew up on a dairy farm in Taranaki, rural, coastal. I loved growing up on the farm and having, I guess, a big family, a lot of space in a rural setting to, you know, get out and enjoy or help dad on the farm and help my parents and, I guess, enjoy what farming has, and I guess the rugby side of it too. Played for the local coastal club and our local schools growing up there, and rugby, farming and family was a big part of, I guess, our upbringing.
So with that sort of in mind, and being around sort of coastal Taranaki and that sort of thing with a farming background, you obviously sort of touched on how rugby and farming sort of go hand in hand. One of the other sides is sort of machinery on the farm and that sort of thing. Have you got any memories of how that sort of tied in, and did you sort of interact and use machinery and stuff like that much when you were growing up?
Yeah, growing up, we naturally, help out on the farm, and I guess operating machinery was one of the nicer jobs that you like to, you go for. Instead of, we did a lot of development on the farm, picking up stones and that sort of thing. So it was always a race to get to drive the tractor. Even development, like we had, local contractor come out and he left his bulldozer there, and yeah. I was like a kid in a candy store operating that all day, just bulldozing over a hill. It was, pretty awesome.
Can you
as a kid?
Can you remember whether that was a cat or not?
Off the top of my head, I think it was.
It's always good to hear. So,
aside from that, we did a lot of hay making as well, and operating tractors. So. Yeah, they were the fun jobs, and summer work when I got a bit older, I worked for the local contractor, doing hay. So that was sort of how I built up a bit of money so I could go away to uni and play rugby and do things there.
So you've been a Crusaders player since 2014. Take us back to when you first joined the club and that transition you went through.
Yeah, so I came down south out of school and went to university. I had no intention of, I guess, playing for the Crusaders at that point. It was about, studying. My oldest brother, Kane, came down to Lincoln University and he studied agriculture there. And, naturally being the younger brother, you're sort of following the footsteps of your older brothers. So, I headed south and enjoyed my time at Lincoln University and was lucky enough to get a position in the Crusaders Academy in 2013. And from there, I guess, playing club rugby and, training through the academy, I got my opportunity with the Crusader Knights in 2014, and later that season, England were touring and we had a game against them, and I was named on the bench for the first time, and it was a pretty special moment and opportunity. And I remember early on, one of the locks who was starting went down early, and I managed to get about 60 minutes, and just from there it was like, man, this is what I want to do. This is awesome. So I never looked back from that point, I guess.
Did you play a bit more for the Crusaders after that in terms of the rest of that season?
I played two more games in the regular Super Rugby season, and then the following year I was offered my first full-time contract. So, even I remember packing down on the side of the scrum and looking forward and seeing Jerome Kino, and it was like, I was literally shaking in my boots. All Black legend and, physical player, and even rubbing shoulders with the likes of Dan Carter, Richie McCaw in the changing rooms. It was a little bit surreal because you watch them growing up, and I guess they're greats of our game in New Zealand and around the world. So that was, a huge buzz, and like I said before, this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool, I suppose, with, as you say, those legends and starting to, learn and develop through some of the things that they certainly impart, and we'll sort of get into some of that later on. So I suppose, in your position, there's an element of growing up in the public eye, certainly, as a young fella coming through and then, becoming a bit more established. How do you deal with that in terms of being in the public eye like that? I mean, from a impressionable young guy at university to then, be playing at the... and the Crusaders the next year. How did you find that, and how did you deal with it?
Yeah, I think earlier on, you got friends, family, like you're getting messages all the time, particularly early in your career, and you get all the good luck texts and that sort of thing, and it can be quite overwhelming, and I guess you sort of get used to it a wee bit, and naturally as you become older, those... Your support texts and your network boils down to your close friends and family, and I guess there are ups and downs in the career of rugby, and I've had a few of them over the time, and like life, I guess you lean on your close friends and family to help you through I guess the bad times and celebrate the good times with you. So it's like life or business or school. You're going to have, I guess, your off days or when you're not quite at your best, but you do get you do lean on, I guess, the support, and you get confidence from your family and friends.
I suppose that sort of leads into a little bit around, you've touched on family and friends and stuff like that. Also, some of the legends that you rub shoulders with early on in the changing rooms and that. You must have had some pretty good mentors and people you looked up to as players and as people that have come through in your life. So what are some of those people that have sort of had a really good impression on you, gave you a bit of mentorship, and what are some of the things that you've learned from them?
Yeah, I think my older brothers, they were naturally, I guess, you looked up to them, and they cracked on the rugby scene, professional rugby scene, when I was at high school. So they sort of, paved the way and, I guess, made the dream almost, achievable for me. And, also my dad, he was... A seriously hard worker, having played rugby himself, and raising eight kids and working hard on the family farm. He didn't say too much to us or push us too much, but I guess his influence and just watching him do what he did, I guess, care for us as a family, and work hard to, I guess, provide us with the opportunities that we had was, something I'm certainly grateful for, and it's awesome to, I guess, have those opportunities. And along the way, I guess, your club coaches, Noel Hicklin, he's He passed away earlier this year, and Colts coach at Lincoln University. I think at a time, you're young, you're fresh, you're keen. Probably gave us a bit of guidance as what we needed as young adults at that time to, I guess, enjoy life. Work hard for each other, and enjoy your footy as well.
And what about with, moving into players that you sort of played with? Is there anyone that stands out on that sort of mentoring side of things, or even just as a person?
Yeah, I think each player, I guess, you share the jersey room, the jersey with, or the locker room with. I've been in a lot of changing rooms and teams over the years, but I mentioned it before, Richie McCaw and Dan Carter, early on in my career, it was almost a little bit nervous to, talk to them at times. But I was rooming with Richie when I made my first start against the Highlanders down in Dunedin. And, he probably gave me the best bit of advice, I guess, in terms of... not trying to do too much and just focus on my own role. So as simple as that sounds, coming from, I guess, possibly, the greatest person to play the game, it couldn't be more true, whether it's club rugby or, even a work life outside of rugby. If you do your job with the best of your ability and you put on the effort, then I guess that's all you can ask for, and you can hang your hat on that. So that was quite good to hear that from a legend.
At Terra, we have Crusaders players and managers come and speak to our new apprentices each year about stepping up and dealing with new responsibilities. It's always an absolute highlight for them. They love it. What advice would you give to young people dealing with new challenges and needing to perform under pressure in life, or in business or in sport?
Yeah, I think with rugby, we sort of talk about, with growth, you have to go outside your comfort zone. If you stay within the realms of what you're used to, what you're comfortable with, then you don't grow. So, we talk about this phrase of being comfortable, being comfortable while being uncomfortable is, if you can sort of understand that, like, it's challenging yourself every day, for that growth. And sometimes you might make mistakes and you might feel like you're going backwards, but I think that's all part of, I guess, progress. It's not lineal. It's not a straight line.
So I suppose with being comfortable, being uncomfortable, there's probably a main event that would stand out in your life, and I can imagine that's your debut with the All Blacks. Now, that one for you was over in Chicago up against Ireland. I happened to be over there at the time, and it was a pretty exciting time. The Chicago Cubs had won the World Series the night before. So tell us about your debut, and if you sort of remember or seeing anything about what was going on in Chicago at the time. But it was and sort of lead us in through that, and around how sort of some of those lessons around being uncomfortable and that sort of thing helped with your debut.
Yeah, that was being named in the All Blacks for the first time. It was a huge moment for myself, and that first game against Ireland, the whole week was, like you said, it was a buzz. The Cubs had just won. We were staying in Chicago, so there's parades going up and down the main street, and it possibly led to a bit of a distracted All Blacks team, to be honest, because we ended up losing against Ireland. But in terms of the game, it was bittersweet, bitter because we lost, but sweet because I made my debut and I guess realised my dream of wanting to become an All Black, and to do it alongside my brother and have my family there was a huge moment. So and it was all a blur, to be honest. Like, it happened so fast, and huge crowd, like, it was running on pure adrenaline, really.
Yeah, it was amazing to see sort of on the other side of the world, such a significant fan base that had obviously used your family and stuff was there. Do you sort of notice a lot of that with the fans being there when you're away like that?
Yeah, when you travel, I guess the fans are in each part of the world, they're different in their own right, like quite vocal. Yeah, and even I guess I didn't notice too much about that crowd in Chicago. I guess I was probably too worried about what was going on with the rugby. We were behind for most of the game and I was on the bench. So, yeah, I guess the crowds we come across and they're pretty awesome. And, yeah, my parents like to get out when they can to support us. And, yeah, they soak up that atmosphere as well.
Are there any that sort of stand out? You sort of said the crowds are different from country to country, and I suppose different atmospheres around grounds. Is there anything, anyone that maybe stands out from some others?
Yeah, like in South Africa, they're really passionate. So you're driving in, you know, you might have 40,000 in the ground, and it's just, it's deafening. And then driving in on the bus on the way in, they're sort of banging on the bus, and it's like, well, you actually take your headphones off and you just appreciate it, like it's, this is awesome, this is a huge moment. And the Northern Hemisphere teams, Cardiff and Edinburgh, they sing, it's, yeah, deafening again, but yes, yeah, some pretty special environments there.
Yeah, sounds awesome. I suppose going back to on the Crusader side of things, you're a long-time Crusader now. You're coming up to 100 games. What is it that's kept you there?
Yeah, so I think I'll go back to the start of, why I wanted to, I guess, play for the Crusaders and, having gone through the academy and... I got to the point the end of 2014 where, I was offered my first contract and I was actually quite settled in Christchurch, had friends here. The lure of the Hurricanes was there because my brother was playing. And even a couple of years later when I went to re-sign, Geordie had started and he signed with the Hurricanes, so... And I guess having Dad played for the Hurricanes, there's a lot of, I guess, you know, like it wasn't, no one put pressure on me, but you sort of felt obliged to, like you'd actually watched the Hurricanes, supported them growing up. But I sort of sat back and I wanted to become an All Black. And at the time I felt that the Crusaders was the best environment to help, I guess, reach my goal there. And I guess the more and more time I spent in the Crusaders environment, it wasn't so much about creating an All Black. It was more about, I guess, the connections, the care that, I guess, the people have for the jersey and what the Crusaders stand for. So that's, I guess, becoming a bigger part of why... I've stayed with the Crusaders and I love leading this team and playing for this team every week. And the supporters are great here too. And it's almost, I'd almost call it home now. So, I've got a lot to thank for the Crusaders up to this point and hopefully get over that 100 game mark and have plenty to go after that as well.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have plenty more coming and plenty more excitement ahead of you. So you just sort of touched on around like a couple of the things that you do value with the Crusaders. One of the big standout things that and the interactions that we have with the Crusaders is definitely the culture that is present within the team and stuff like that. So do you want to expand a little bit more on sort of just some of the culture and that's at the Crusaders and how you value it and what some of the really key things are that you think help people sort of embed the value of that jersey and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it before, like the culture's huge, like it's not so much about, the performance on the field. It's obviously that's a huge part of the Crusaders and that it's it's about the people and, you know, the care for, I guess, the people within the environment and the community of the Crusaders. So, you know, you're turning up to call it work, but it's barely work. Like when you love it, and you got guys who, you know, they care as well, and I guess love the environment. Razor talked about the last few years of uniting the team through, you know, I guess themes and that sort of thing, and what the Crusaders represent, the history, the people, the community. There's a lot there that when you, I guess, step into the Crusaders environment, that you're like, yeah, this is awesome. This is, why I want to play here, or, you know, it's you're playing for your mate and a bigger purpose as such. So it's not so much about the individual. It's about, I guess, the greater Crusaders community or brand.
And I guess many of our listeners are business owners, so they'll kind of relate to that, I guess, you know, wanting to be part of something bigger. And, you know, and for a business, having a positive team culture is essential too. What do you think that others can learn from how the Crusaders kind of develop and grow that culture?
Yeah, I think it's about empowering, like, the people and, you know, having, I guess, a common vision or purpose that everyone can draw upon. They might have slightly different, I guess, a why behind they do what they do, but in the end, they're all driving in the same direction, for that common purpose, which, yeah, Scott Robinson has done really well as a head coach with the Crusaders about, you know, pulling guys from, like myself, from Taranaki up north. You've got local guys who have watched the Crusaders their whole life. You've got Pacific Islanders who, you know, really find a purpose within, I guess, the Crusaders, or a theme, or, yeah, to, I guess, yeah, drive to the same goal.
I suppose following on from that, you're now a key person in that leadership team, of course, and a mentor to younger players coming through, as you'd said. And how do you do this well, knowing that, I suppose, down the track, one of those younger players may potentially, you know, take your position in a few years? I mean, you know, you're a professional rugby player, it's your livelihood, but you've got to continue to sort of mentor and develop those younger guys down the track.
Yeah, I think I take it back to when I first made the team. I was lucky enough to be around, still around, Sam Whitelock, he was there, Luke Romano, Kieran Reid, and even Richie McCaw, and those sorts of guys, they gave you the knowledge, and they sat down beside you and said, you know, you're basically learning off them all the time through training, and rubbing shoulders with them. And I think if you're not getting challenged at training, then you're not going to grow or become a better player. So I guess when you do have a Zach Gallagher or a Mitch Dunshay or a Quinton Strange, you know, really chomping at your heels and saying, yeah, I want your jersey, it really pushes you to be at your best. Because if you're not, then, you'll be in the stands watching and, they'll be playing your position. So I think a little bit of internal competition is great for... for the Crusaders, and it has worked in the past. So, yeah, it's, I guess, how you get growth.
Just as sort of like the Crusaders captain, and you've got some things that you've learned over your time and your role, and now you're sort of in that leadership position, are there any sort of key things that you can think of that have made you really more of an effective leader?
Yeah, I think... naturally, when I first took on the leadership role, having a deep care for the team and wanting the team to do well, I took on way too much. I tried to do everything. And I actually sort of almost burnt myself out. I was like, shit, I can't really do everything here. I'm going to have to lean on other guys around me. So I got to that point where I was like, I stepped back and I actually said, why don't I delegate to my vice captains and I guess the leadership group, and they could, you know, I could lean on their expertise in those areas, and we could all combine and work together, and it would actually be more efficient for myself, and it would actually be better for the team because everyone would be contributing in their own specific areas, essentially like a business, I guess, where you're leaning on, you know, your expertise in all your different departments. So I guess specifically I lean on, Richie Moanga. He does a lot of our attack game. Cody Taylor, he'll do a lot of our defense. And Sam, Mitch Drummond, and Davey Harvilli, they're sort of, I guess, the back seat as such. They're sort of the old dogs in the group that have a lot of experience, and they steer the ship as such, where as the captain, I work alongside these boys, and Razor as head coach, basically, trying to be the glue that holds everything together. And at the same time, it's, not trying to overcomplicate things, and at the end of the day, I'm a rugby player and I want to be the best, so that's by performing on the weekend and not making things too complicated during the week.
Good advice. So I guess we've all had experiences or situations we've faced that didn't go to plan. Can you think of something and what you learned from it?
Yeah, I think within our team, we talk about what-ifs or scenarios that we might encounter, I guess, specifically out on the field. So that sort of primes us. We're aware of what might, I guess, what could happen. So we're, I guess, a step ahead in terms of responding to that, whatever that situation might be. So, I think that's a bit of mental preparation and almost like a contingency plan for a business. We're aware of what might go wrong, and this is what we do if it does. But specifically to me as an individual, I've had two red cards now. Like it's probably the lowest point in my rugby career, to be honest. I guess with the scrutiny and the pressure that comes on. And I guess the time on the sideline, it's time to, reflect and learn and grow. And you try to put measures in place that it doesn't happen again. It's a lot around, I guess, technique and, a little bit about the mental game as well. So, and then at the end of that, you've got to build your confidence back up to, front up for the next game. So there's, a little bit to that, and I guess it's you're leaning on support and advice as well.
I sort of suppose that comes from, with lows, you also get the benefit of having some really good highs and stuff like that. So I can imagine you've got plenty of really good standout moments. Have you got any sort of major highlights or anything you can call upon as that stands out?
Yeah, I think we're pretty lucky as rugby players to, travel to some amazing places, experience some different cultures. Like South Africa, the Northern Hemisphere tours, going to France, Italy, the UK. We're pretty lucky to go to those parts of the world as sports people. So in terms of like a single event, I think it would have to be a single moment would be the 2017 final in Johannesburg. It was the final away from home, the first Super Rugby final I'd been involved in, and there was about 40,000 or 45,000 crazy South Africans. They're very vocal, passionate supporters, and We managed to get the victory there, and it was a huge highlight in my career.
Yeah, that was against the Lions, wasn't it?
Yes, the Lions.
Yeah, and I can certainly remember that as a memorable. And obviously, it's you've moved on from there and won multiple championships from that point.
Yeah, for sure. I think last year, 2020, I was named captain, but I injured my foot and missed that. That championship, Cody lifted the trophy, and the following year or last year. Was the first final that I played in as captain, and to be honest, to get to the end of that game holding the trophy was almost like a relief. Similar to, I guess, what Richie McCaw talked about with the World Cup final and being in New Zealand. Obviously, probably not to that extent when you got the whole country on your, on your shoulders as such, but a similar feeling that it was. And we've sort of done it.
I mean, certainly, you know, pretty full on going from season to season being a professional rugby player. You know, you've got to have, you know, I suppose, interests away from rugby, and you need to be able to wind down and get away from the game. Now, we hear you like fishing, and you've got a new boat.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Enjoy fishing. I grew up next to the coast, and my granddad and uncle and I guess my family was loved fishing and everything about that. So bought a boat in the end of 2020, so I've got that down here in Christchurch, and hit out a few times. It's sort of picking the weather windows when I've got my day off, and they don't always line up, but I've had some use over the off season, and if I don't take my own boat out, I'd like to get up, go out with Dad or whoever up in Taranaki. So love me fishing.
Any favourite spots, and anything in particular you like trying to catch?
I like chasing the harpooker or groper. Down here in South Island, they call it. Great eating, and there's a bit of a hunt for them because you got to go a bit of a distance offshore. It's a bit of a, it's almost like pig hunting, you know, like it's rewarding when you get them. Plenty of good eating on the fish as well.
Sounds good. Yeah, and you've also been renovating. We've got our sources here. How's that been going?
Yeah, so the start of 2020, you purchased a house, and I was living just around the corner. So during the lockdowns, I'd actually walk around, and I'd have my sledgehammer around there and do all the stuff that didn't require too much skill, like banging out a wall or filling up a skip bin. So that was what I did during the lockdown to keep myself busy, along with a bit of training. But it's come up really nice. Family home, and we're settled there, and it's close to rugby park or work. So enjoying living in there at the moment. And I don't know if I'll be take up the tools and get into building. Some of the work might be a little bit marginal, but
Is that a potential interest at some stage down the track though?
Yes and no. I'd like to play rugby for as long as I can, but until the body sort of packs up on me, I think something in the agricultural industry would be for me. What that is, I'm not too sure. And hopefully got a little bit more rugby to play before then.
Well, if you ever need a cat machine, you know where to come. So
Dad's actually doing a bit of development at the moment, so he's putting some new laneways in. Could be arranged.
We might have to follow that one up, I think. So finally, you've achieved a lot, and we've talked some about that today. Crusaders captain in almost 50 All Black Tests now as well. What goals do you still have, both in rugby and also away from the game?
Yeah, for me, I've just recently become a father 6 months ago. So I guess off field, firstly, I want to be, I guess, the best dad that I can be and best husband. So that's a huge part of my life now. So on field, when it comes to rugby, next year there's a huge event in France that, yeah, is right up there, having, I guess, lost the World Cup, or not winning it in 2019, was a huge disappointment. So, yeah, next year that with the World Cup is what I'm aiming for, and I guess that's a long-term goal, and in the short to medium term is, very short term, is actually another super title, so... that's my immediate focus at the moment, and aiming towards that.
Good.
Well, thank you, Scott, for coming on our Broken Ground podcast. It's been really great chatting to you today. And thanks so much as well to you, our listeners. I know you'll have enjoyed today's conversation.
Thanks, Marty, Anne-Marie, and Richard for having me on the Broken Ground podcast, and also to Terracat for having me. So, yeah, cheers, thanks.
Yeah, so we'd love your feedback. To get in touch, you can send us a message on our Terracat social media channels. And please keep an eye on our Terracat Facebook page for details about next month's episode of Breaking Ground. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Cheers.